The Revolution. 16. This was me at the beginning of 1933, a young man of 25, well-fed, well-turned out, well-educated, friendly and polite, past the awkward, gangling student phase with some corners already rubbed off, but basically untried. A typical example of the German educated bourgeois class in general, but otherwise an unknown quantity. There was nothing particularly interesting or startling to say about my life so far, except that it had been lived against an arrestingly dramatic backdrop. The only experiences that had gone a bit deeper and left some marks, scars, and character traits were the delights and pains of the experiments in love that every young person of this age encounters. At that time, they interested me more than anything else. They were the essence of my life. Incidentally, like all young people of my age and class, I still lived at home. I was well looked after and well dressed, but kept short of pocket money as a matter of principle by a distinguished, aging, interesting, uncomfortable father whom I secretly loved. My father was the most important person in my life, though I was sometimes less than happy about it. If I wanted to undertake something serious or make an important decision, I had no choice but to consult my father. To describe myself as I then was, or rather potentially was, I still have no choice but to describe my father. He was by conviction a liberal, and by stance and disposition a Prussian Puritan. There is a specifically Prussian variant of Puritanism that was one of the most important spiritual forces in German life before 1933, and still plays a certain role beneath the surface. It is related to classical English Puritanism, but has some characteristic differences. Its prophet is Kant, rather than Calvin, its greatest standard-bearer, Frederick the Great, rather than Cromwell. Like English Puritanism, it demands severity, dignity, abstinence from the pleasures of life, attention to one's duty, loyalty, honesty, indeed self-denial, and a somber scorn for the world. Just like his English counterpart, the Prussian Puritan keeps his sons shorn of pocket money and frowns at their youthful experiments with love. Prussian Puritanism is, however, secular. It serves and owes allegiance to not Jehovah, but the Roi de Prusse. Its distinctions and earthly rewards are not private wealth, but promotion in the civil service. Perhaps the most important difference is that Prussian Puritanism has a back door into unsupervised freedom. It is marked private. It is well known that in private the dark, ascetic King Frederick the Great, the exemplar of Prussian Puritanism, played the flute, wrote verses, was a free thinker and a friend of Voltaire. Through 2 centuries, the majority of his disciples, senior Prussian civil servants and officers, with their severe, pinched faces, followed similar inclinations in private. Prussian Puritanism echoes the motto, "Hard outside, soft inside." The Prussian Puritan is the inventor of the curious construct that says, "As a human being I tell you, but as an official I say." This accounts for the fact, so difficult for foreigners to understand, that while Prussia as a whole, and also Prussian Germany, always seems and acts like an inhuman, cruelly voracious machine, when you visit it and get to know Prussians and Germans as private individuals, they make an altogether attractive, humane, harmless, and amiable impression. As a nation, Germany leads a double life, because almost every German leads a double life. In private, my father was a passionate lover of literature. He had a library of some 10,000 volumes that he added to right up until his death. What is more, he did not just own all these books, he had actually read them. The great names of 19th-century European literature, Dickens and Thackeray, Balzac and Hugo, Turgenev and Tolstoy, Rabe and Keller, to mention only his favourites, were not just names to him, but intimate friends with whom he had held long, silent, passionate discussions. His conversation blossomed when he met someone with whom he could continue these discussions out loud. Now, literature is an awkward hobby. You can keep a love of collecting or cultivating flowers private, and that may also go for a love of art or music, but the daily occupation with a living spirit cannot be kept entirely private. One can easily imagine that a man who for years had surveyed all the heights and depths of European thought and literature would one day find it impossible to be a narrow, pedantic, dutiful Prussian civil servant. Not so my father. He remained just that. However, without ever breaking the mould, he developed a sceptically wise, liberal attitude within himself, which reduced the civil servant's persona to a mere mask. The glue by which he held both together was a secret, silent, sublime irony. That seems to me the only means to ennoble and legitimize the highly problematical figure of the bureaucrat in human terms. Never for a moment to forget that the powerful dignitary behind the desk and the puny supplicant in front of it are both just humans and nothing more. They both have their parts in the play, and that of the official requires strictness and coolness, but also sensitivity, benevolence, and care. Writing an order in a critical matter in the coldest, formal terms may require more delicacy of touch than a lyric poem, more wisdom and fairness than the denouement of a novel. During the walks that my father liked to take with me at this time, he gently tried to introduce me to these mysteries of the higher civil service. It was important to him that I should become a civil servant. He had observed, not without a certain disquiet, that what in him had been confined to reading and discussion showed a tendency in me to degenerate into writing. He had not particularly encouraged this tendency. Of course, he had not used clumsy prohibitions, certainly not, that was out of the question. I could write as many novels, short stories, and essays in my free time as I liked. If they contributed to my income, so much the better. But I should first study something sensible and pass my exams. At bottom, his puritanical soul mistrusted a life that consisted of visiting cafes and scribbling at irregular hours. His liberal spirit was, moreover, disinclined to leave the administration of the state in the hands of Philistines, lovers of power and chicanery, who would squander the precious capital of state authority in meaningless decrees and regulations. There were, in his opinion, too many of these already. He did his best to make me into what he had been, a civilized administrator. He probably thought that in that way he was doing the best for me and the German state.